These are pieces of legislation with my name on it. They're in a special session that I have called, and I will be very engaged on a daily basis.
Governor Bill Walker calls lawmakers back to work. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, May 19th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Arctic coastal residents testify in Washington about offshore oil leases.
Every one of our eight communities is surviving on oil and gas money.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence.
And by
Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
Governor Bill Walker called the legislature into a special session that begins Monday to finish the work lawmakers failed to complete during the 121-day session that ended yesterday. But big differences remain over how to pay for the state's budget, and it's not clear how lawmakers will overcome challenges in the 30-day special session that they couldn't solve in the past 4 months. There are several things that will be different than in the regular session. The first is the legislature will be focused on 10 items Walker requested. These items include the state's operating and capital budgets, but they also include legislation to draw money from permanent fund earnings to pay for the annual budget, as well as a bill to overhaul the state's oil and gas taxes. Walker called for legislators to consider bills to introduce an income tax and to raise taxes on motor fuel, alcohol, mining, tobacco, marijuana, and commercial fishing. House Minority Leader Anchorage Democrat Chris Tuck says it will be good for the legislature to focus on these issues.
We don't want to see guns on campus getting brought up. We don't want to see a bunch of things be brought up that really would distract us from fixing the fiscal situation that we have now.
The special session will also differ from the regular session because the state is facing a deadline to avoid shutting down the state government on July 1st and laying off government workers. Pink slip notices would go out on June 1st if the legislature doesn't pass a budget by then. House Speaker Mike Chenault says these notices should be avoided.
It causes maybe not a lot of physical damage, but it causes mental damage to state employees. Not knowing whether you're going to get laid off in 30 days, not knowing whether your wife and kids are going to be able to pay the rent.
Governor Walker says he plans to play a more active role talking with legislators than he did during the regular session.
I'm very respectful of the separation of powers, but I think that these are pieces of legislation with my name on it. They're in a special session that I have called, and I will be very engaged on a daily basis.
The legislature spent the last day disagreeing over how to extend the session. The majority caucuses wanted to pass a 10-day extension, but they couldn't get the House Minority Caucus to agree. The bigger disagreement, however, is over how to pay for the budget. Chenault says his caucus would prefer to pay for it by drawing on the state's savings, the Constitutional Budget Reserve.
It's the easiest option for members of my caucus. I believe it's the best for the state of Alaska.
But this will take a vote by three-quarters of both legislative bodies, and the House minority is able to block a CBR draw. Tuck says agreement on oil and gas tax changes is essential to a broader agreement. He expressed disappointment that the Senate didn't stick closer to the House oil and gas tax bill.
There was a bipartisan effort that went out from the House over to the Senate. The Senate passed something back over to us that just simply wasn't acceptable to us in the Independent Democratic Coalition.
Tuck also says he wants the budget to be part of a long-term fiscal plan for the state. Walker still wants the legislature to pass a plan that will balance the budget by the fiscal year that starts in July 2018. The bond rating firm Standard & Poor highlighted the importance of the state balancing its spending and revenue today. In a ratings update, an S&P analyst said the firm expects negative pressure on Alaska's credit rating to intensify if lawmakers can't agree on fiscal reforms. Walker has included many of the different tax increases in one item. They stalled when they were in separate bills. Some legislation that isn't related to the budget will be on the agenda. It includes a bill that would make changes to some adoption procedures. Other measures are aimed at foster care, the state's individual insurance market, and benefits for law enforcement officers and firefighters who die in the line of duty. Because the legislature failed to pass a budget and will have to convene next week, a proposal that recently passed in conference committee could come back in the special session. The prospect has leaders in cruise ship port communities concerned. The measure would leave those towns without millions of dollars they normally receive from state head tax revenues. KHNS's Emily Files has more.
If the legislature picks up where it left off and the proposal to withhold commercial passenger vessel taxes goes forward,
that'd be devastating.
Scott Hahn is borough manager in Skagway, a town with 800 year-round residents that is flooded by 800,000 cruise ship passengers in the summer. He says his town would be left without $4 million it uses to fund port improvements and basic utilities. Here's how the passenger tax works. The money comes from a $34.50 per person tax on cruise ship visitors traveling in Alaska waters for more than 3 days. After the state receives that money, it gives out $5 per passenger to the first 7 ports of call visited. Normally, cruise ships stop in fewer than 7 ports. In FY17, the state would distribute about $15 million to communities. But with key language removed from the operating budget, the state would hold on to that money.
The system's broken and we can't keep distributing under a broken system.
That's Eagle River Senator Anna McKinnon speaking during a conference committee meeting. She voted for the proposal to take out the 7 ports of call money. No one from McKinnon's office was available to comment about what part of the system she views as broken. But she could have been referring to a recent review of the passenger tax from the State Division of the Legislative Audit. McKinnon requested the report. The audit found communities generally comply with regulations when spending head tax money, but it also said there's a threat to the solvency of the tax fund if a higher number of passengers visit a greater number of ports. The audit said Ketchikan and Juneau levying their own municipal head taxes also raises questions about the tax structure. The conference committee passed the proposal to withhold passenger taxes from port towns, but Juneau Representative Kathy Munoz doesn't think the committee's proposal will stand during the special session. She says the legislature would have to change statute to withhold passenger taxes from port communities.
So in other words, that's a pretty high bar, and I don't anticipate that that's going to happen.
Aside from Juneau and Skagway, another major port of call in southeast Alaska is Ketchikan. Dan Bockhorst is the borough manager there. He says his staff has already come up with a backup plan to pay for services like a downtown shuttle that are usually supported by passenger taxes. But he hopes those funds won't be withheld.
I am optimistic that the impoundment of the state shared taxes that occurred in the conference committee version of the state operating budget will be reversed when the Alaska legislature adopts ultimately an operating budget for the upcoming fiscal year.
$4 million for the city and borough of Ketchikan and millions more for other port communities hangs in the balance. In Haines, I'm Emily Files.
If oil companies are ever going to return to drill for oil in federal waters off the Arctic, they will need leases. Senator Lisa Murkowski complained at a hearing in Washington this afternoon that the leasing plan the feds are considering is too limited. She bolstered her position by calling on an Arctic Slope mayor who testified that he and his neighbors need the industry. But other Arctic residents sat in the back of the hearing room, passionately opposed to offshore drilling. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports.
In Washington, both sides of any Arctic drilling dispute want to show they have locals on their side. John Hobson Jr., a whaling captain and the mayor of Wainwright on the Chukchi Sea, came out to make the case for federal leasing in the Arctic. Hobson is also a member of the North Slope Borough, which taxes the industry to provide services to the region.
Every one of our 8 communities is surviving on oil and gas money.
A snow machine can cost $12,000, he said. A boat and motor might cost $20,000. Last year, Hobson said he had to pay over $7 a gallon to operate his truck, his boat, and his four-wheeler.
We need infrastructure to be able to tax so that we can employ people so they have the opportunity to hunt. The world is banking on saving animals without thinking of my life, my children's life. Where are we going to live?
The Bureau of Ocean Energy Management has proposed 3 lease sales in Alaska over the next 5 years, one each in the Chukchi, the Beaufort, and Cook Inlet. But Abigail Ross Hopper, director of the agency, could not assure Murkowski that those sales would remain in the final plan.
I think, Chairman, it would be premature to make any statement about what the fate of those Alaska sales in the final program.
Murkowski zeroed in on a tweet Hopper's agency issued the day before. It shows the BOEM boss meeting with tribal council members from Point Lay. Although it's just down the coast from Wainwright, this group of village leaders is ardently against offshore drilling. They came to Washington to participate in a Keep It in the Ground rally. Murkowski says she has no problem with the picture the agency tweeted, just the message.
You tweet in it that it was you clearly outline that they are opposed to drilling in the Arctic.
Murkowski says the tweet suggests BOEM is biased against Arctic leasing.
I looked at it and said, you know, how do we not conclude that the die is already cast and that your agency has already decided what it is that you're going to be doing?
Well, I didn't write that tweet, but I am familiar with it. I'm sorry if you took that impression from it.
The Point Lay delegation had an appointment to meet with Murkowski after the hearing. Some said they were surprised their visit, hosted by an environmental group, seemed to tick people off. Celia Atungorik and Jane Tuckrook are both raising children in Point Lay to respect traditional ways. They dispute that they need the oil industry to support their subsistence lifestyle.
We don't have to have money to go out. We can go out there on foot and our own bare hands and still get what we need to eat.
Because that's exactly how our ancestors did it in the past, and it worked for them. So what's to say that it can't work for us?
Tuckrook has a job. She's Point Lay's tribal administrator. She says a switch to renewable energy technology might produce more paychecks in Point Lay. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, New Talk gets funding to aid relocation, but structures marked to move are deteriorating.
Some buildings, the screws or nails are coming out due to ground shifting in winter and summer.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by
ExxonMobil Alaska, working with more than 100 Alaska communities and thousands of Alaskans. Today, ExxonMobil is producing natural gas condensate from the Point Thompson facilities.
The U.S. House and Senate have passed appropriations bills that include numerous Alaska military construction projects. A release from Representative Don Young's office lists projects slated for 5 sites, including more than $213 million at Eielson Air Force Base, related to the planned basing of F-35 fighter jets. The F-35 projects include aircraft hangars as well as field training, munition storage, and missile maintenance facilities. Alaska Ground-Based Missile Defense System funding in the bill includes $155 million for a long-range discrimination radar at Clear Air Station and $20 million for a new fire station at Clear. There's also $9.5 million for electrical system upgrades at the Fort Greely Missile Defense Base. Construction of a $47 million unmanned aerial vehicle hangar at Fort Wainwright is also in the U.S. House-approved appropriations bill. The hangar is for the post's new Gray Eagle Intelligence, Surveillance, and Reconnaissance Unit. The bill also includes more than $29 million to upgrade and expand an AWACS aircraft hangar at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage, and nearly $5 million for a new fuel offload facility at J-Bear. This week marked the one-year anniversary of the shooting death of John Kverluk, Jr., outside of the Rock and Rodeo Bar in Fairbanks. Based on witness accounts and video surveillance, police initially went after four suspects in connection to the incident. Two of those suspects have been apprehended and remain in custody, awaiting trial. As Tim Bodoni from KIYU in Galena reports, even though one suspect is facing murder charges, the alleged shooter remains at large.
John Kverluk was originally from the village of Koyuk. He graduated from the Galena Interior Learning Academy in 2010 and subsequently trained as a plumber in Fairbanks. On May 16, 2015, he took his wife Shailene to the Rock and Rodeo on the Old Steese Highway in Fairbanks for their first night out after the birth of their daughter Kinley roughly a month earlier. Charging documents suggest that Kverluk tried to defend his wife from one of the four suspects. A fight broke out in the bar and the men were ejected. Shortly after, in the parking lot, one of the suspects retrieved a 9mm Glock pistol from a silver SUV and shot Kverluk multiple times before all four suspects fled the scene. In October, U.S. Marshals and local police in Selma, Texas, apprehended Anchorage's Joel Roland Joseph, charging him with first- and second-degree murder in connection with Kverluk's death. At his arraignment in December, Joseph pled not guilty. According to court documents, Joseph, despite the murder charges looming over him, is not the individual who allegedly pulled the trigger that night. Fairbanks Police Detective Peyton Meredith explains.
You don't have to actually be the shooter to be charged with murder, depending on what your actions were involved in the case. You know, and, you know, each case is different, of course. His level of participation in the homicide, his level of culpability raised his level, you know, to that charge.
Joseph's attorney, Steve Wells, disagrees.
What they have done is charged him under a theory that he aided or abetted or encouraged someone else to do that. We dispute that.
Instead, Wells claims that Joseph had no interest in elevating what began as a fight in the Rock and Rodeo Bar to a homicide.
Our defense is that Joel Joseph didn't want him dead and didn't solicit his death or encourage his death or do anything to aid or abet the other fellow who did pull the trigger.
The identity of the alleged shooter, who remains at large, has not been revealed publicly. If Joseph knows who fired the shots that killed Kverluk, Wells says that he doesn't have to tell.
Anybody has a legal right to not provide that information. As far as whether Mr. Joseph has that information, what he knows, the extent of what he knows, things like that, that is all part of what this case is about.
Anchorage resident Demarius Hinson was also arrested in connection with the Kverluk shooting. Police tracked him down in Orlando, Florida last October and arrested him on charges of hindering prosecution. Police also arrested Joel Joseph's older brother David in Anchorage on charges of hindering prosecution. It was David Joseph's 9mm handgun that was used in the shooting, and which David reported to police as stolen, allegedly after a phone conversation between the Joseph brothers shortly after the incident. That leaves two people who were allegedly involved with Kverluk's death unaccounted for, including the man who likely fired the gun. Multiple witnesses and video surveillance footage depict the men as African Americans in their 20s or 30s who traveled from Anchorage to Fairbanks shortly before the incident. Detective Meredith says that the search for the at-large suspects continues.
We're still trying to get information from the public to help identify these people. There could be things working behind the scenes as well, trying to get the identity of the other two people involved in the homicide. You know, everything's being done at this time that can be done, but we are still very optimistic that those people will be identified.
Both Hinson and Joel Joseph remain in custody at the Fairbanks Correctional Center. They're scheduled to stand trial for the homicide of John Kverluk in August, though Wells is skeptical the trial will happen so soon after the initial arrests and indictments. In Galena, this is Tim Bodoni.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Native elders and Arctic scientists explore climate change at Science of the Land Camp in Fairbanks, June 14 to 17. Travel grant deadline May 24 at AINEAlaska.org. This message sponsored by the Association of Interior Native Educators. Mount Edgecombe High School in Sitka encourages rural Alaska high school students to apply to be part of their 70-year legacy. With a rich curriculum from art to advanced engineering, over 10,000 alumni strong, 90% of their students go on to a four-year college or other post-secondary education. Explore your talents and develop your dreams at Mount Edgecombe High School. Apply online at mehs.us. This message sponsored by Mount Edgecombe High School.
Relocation efforts continue for what many consider America's first climate refugees. Newtok, a community of more than 300 people in southwest Alaska, has been eroding into the Ninglick River for decades. This week, the village received nearly $1 million federal grant to help with its move. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports.
The new site won't have a power grid, water treatment plant, or sewage lagoon for years, so buildings moved or constructed there must function independently. The grant from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development will make 12 homes at the new village site operational off the grid. It'll add systems for generating electricity, treating water, and disposing human waste.
Those 12 families will be pioneers. They'll be living in a kind of a pioneer existence.
That's Aaron Cook with the Cold Climate Housing Research Center. He's helping develop these systems. The new site, Matulovic, sits across the Ninglick River, about 12 miles from the current village. Cook says a handful of people already live at Matulovic during the summer.
In that way, the pioneer living is really not so different than the existing tradition of fish camp. You know, you've got a place that you occupy seasonally, and it's got the things you need to live.
Cook has been working with the Newtok tribe for 8 years on relocation efforts. In that time, he says he's seen whole football field-sized expanses of land fall into the water. Tom John, Newtok tribal administrator, lives in the village.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the erosion is continuing as I'm speaking right now.
John says 72 buildings stand in the current village. Most are houses. The tribe already has another grant to move the 12 homes from the old site to the new that will receive the pioneering systems. 2 years ago, an engineer picked these houses as structurally sound enough to move. But John says now things have changed.
Some buildings, the screws or nails are coming out due to ground shifting in winter and summer.
The houses that relocate will do so next summer. But John says the people living in the houses might not move with them.
They will need store to buy their grubs. Students have to attend school. So it's still in a planning process. We have to deal with what we cannot see during these relocation efforts.
Families might not want to split from their extended families or from their community. If they want to stay at the old site, they'll have to find homes to stay in amid shrinking housing. Like John says, there's still a lot to work out. All the while, state and federal agencies are monitoring what's happening in Newtok. Lee Jones is with the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, which issued the grant for the pioneering systems. Jones says as climate change continues to threaten coastal communities, more groups are looking to the village as a model for relocation.
Even though the whole world may never have heard of Newtok, in some sense the whole world is watching.
This summer, the tribe will reinforce the roads at the new site to make the move possible and learn how to build energy-efficient houses. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
The winners of Alaska's Name the New Ferry contest didn't know about it until they got a call from Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Malott. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports on Tuesday's announcement that one would be the Taslina and the other the Hubbard.
Most classrooms don't get this kind of call.
I'm Governor Bill Walker.
And I'm Byron Malott, Lieutenant Governor.
And we have an important announcement today that we wanted to share with you. We're looking for a young lady named Malia Baran. Is she there?
She was at the school in Port Ellsworth on Lake Clark. During the Skype video call, Walker explained that her essay about the Taslina Glacier was a winner in a statewide competition.
You did a very nice job, very nice report, and we have selected you as the recipient of one of the two names for the two ships.
All ferries are named after glaciers, In an interview with KDLG in Dillingham, the seventh grader read the first paragraph of her essay.
The Taslina would be a great name for one of Alaska's new ferries. Imagine stepping out of your car amidst many other parked vehicles. Your heart rapidly beats with excitement. You are on a dock looking at a beautiful ferry in which you will be riding from Skagway all the way to Juneau. Your anxiety and excitement overwhelms you as you breathlessly whisper, "The Taslina. I will be riding on the Taslina."
The name means swift river in Otna Athabascan. The other winner is 10th grader Taylor Thompson of Eagle River, who proposed the name Hubbard. That glacier is near Yakutat, which is Malott's hometown. It's famous for advancing, often rapidly, while most other glaciers are retreating. She also got a call from the governor, where she explained her reasoning.
Well, I was looking at the list of all the glaciers in Alaska, and there's a lot. And that one, it was just a really nice name, and I started looking at the glacier and I realized that it was really nice, so I decided to write my essay about it.
Her essay said the glacier, quote, "surpasses all others in its beauty and magnificence. A ferry named after it would surely do the same." Walker said he likes the name because it represents growth and his administration is trying to grow Alaska's economy. Malott said he liked it because the Hubbard is the world's largest tidewater glacier, which ties into Alaska's size. The two essays were chosen from around 450 submitted by Alaska students. One of the judges was Ferry System spokesman Jeremy Woodrow, who said it was a hard choice.
The name was part of the consideration, but you really had to put the best well and the most well-written essays forward.
He says one of the more popular names suggested was Marjorie in Glacier Bay National Park and Preserve. The two new state ferries are under construction at the Vigor Alaska Shipyard in Ketchikan. They're due to be completed in 2018. They're slated to sail Northern Lynn Canal between Juneau, Haines, and Skagway. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Emily Files in Haines, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Tim Bedoni in Galena, and Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Business Administration program at Alaska Pacific University delivers a distinctive education grounded in real-world experience with life-friendly schedules designed to support your personal and professional goals. Move forward with APU and apply today at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU. What can a tiny piece of dust do to you? It can stop you in your tracks. Studies show exposure to dust pollution can cause tightness in your chest, wheezing, and shortness of breath, even if you're healthy. When you're on an unpaved road, drive slowly, especially when operating an ATV. When hauling dirt, cover it up. Do your part, avoid dust, and clear the air. We'll all breathe easier. This message sponsored by Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. Commercial, sport, subsistence, personal use. Some hear these labels and think conflict. The Salmon Project sees connections. Join 10,000 Alaskans whose lives are connected by Alaska's salmon. Visit salmonlife.org to experience the stories. And find the Salmon Project on Facebook to join the community. Salmon Life, Salmon Love. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.